In our current media culture of hot takes, Twitter reactions, and talking heads, the news can often seem bewildering. Recent events highlighting the continued problems of race relations in this country make understanding the problems we're facing all the more important. Jeff Chang's We Gonna Be All Right is a study of race, inequity, and injustice, and a call to act for anyone concerned about them. The book is a series of six essays. Chang says he seeks to rewrite the broken narrative about race in the country. Jeff Chang is the executive director of the Institute for Diversity in the Arts at Stanford University, and it's a great pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Jeff, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks so much, Joe. It's great to be here.
What brought you to this particular subject?
I've been working on a book that came out in 2014, actually, before the non-indictment of Darren Wilson in Ferguson. That was about the question of how we see race and how that's changed and not changed over the last 50 years. And what I kind of backed into was this apparent kind of paradox where what we see in the popular culture, in our media, are these images of a rainbow nation. But if you look at the statistics, all of the indices show that we've been moving back towards segregation and towards widening gaps between the races on everything from wealth and income and health to life expectancy to questions of policing, mass incarceration, even premature death. And so resegregation became a topic that I was really a lot more curious about. And this book is sort of that. It's sort of trying to connect the dots from housing and schooling segregation, resegregation, to what's been happening in the culture as well.
How do you think the narrative got so broken?
You know, it's this larger conversation about the conversation that we don't have about race, right? And we have this sort of way in which we deal with this as a country where there's a crisis and then there's sort of a reaction to that, and then there's a backlash, and then there's sort of exhaustion, and then we're back in crisis mode, you know? So we kind of look at this from 1965 to 2014, 2015, 2016, and we see that every once in a while, you know, this crisis cycle turns again. Turned for 1992, when the Los Angeles riots came off, it turned again. We were sort of right back at that moment of crisis. And I feel like it's because what we haven't been paying attention to is the way that the infrastructure of policies and ideas that was pushing us to racial justice, towards racial equity, have been dismantled, have been steadily unraveled over the last 50 years, even as the picture of diversity has become more and more mainstream. So we've got to get back to that conversation about what it really means to reach, a fully desegregated and equal society for all.
That idea of getting back to the conversation, were we ever at a gold standard point where the conversation was going on and it was working in a positive direction? And if so, how do we get back to that? And if not, how do you set the restart button and start it again?
Yeah, I think that's the question that we're all trying to resolve right now. But if you look at this question nationally, 1965 was the last time that we had a national consensus to deal with racial justice. And this was a moment during which people were not only concerned about race, they said, we have to do something about this. We have to make sure that desegregation happens. And so you see a raft of major pieces of legislation passed. And since that time, you know, those rules, those laws, Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, and all of the kinds of things that have come in the wake of that, fair housing, fair lending laws, all of these things have been chipped away at, sometimes completely, taken apart and put away. And so I'm writing towards that. That's what I'm trying to write towards, is how do we get back to another national consensus around this? We know that there's a problem and everybody's concerned about it, and yet we are having a conversation in which those who are raising the questions of racial injustice are being called racists, and those who are saying that Black Lives Matter are being countered by people who are saying, well, all lives matter. But of course all lives matter, and that's why we have to specify that Black Lives Matter, because in this particular moment, what's clear by all the factual evidence is that we don't seem to value Black lives as well as much as we do other lives. And so the conversation that the Movement for Black Lives has been trying to focus us on are these questions of racial inequality. And if we can keep our eye on that for a while, if we can continue to struggle to keep our eye on that, even amidst all of the politics of division, then I think we've got a fighting chance to be able to get to a point where we can find the language to be able to address these things, and then the policies, the politics to address these things.
It seems like I have to ask this question, but where does this conversation bring us during an election year and an election cycle, and especially such a divisive one?
Yeah, it's so hard. And you've got politicians openly, obviously Donald Trump and other politicians who are using race, anti-immigrant, anti-Black, Islamophobic kinds of appeals to stir up fears amongst, you know, a small group of people, but a group from which they believe that they can build an electorate, a sort of electoral majority. And I think that, you know, those are the kind of conditions that we're working in. You know, I'm hoping that after the elections, one way or the other, that we're able to say, okay, we've been through this, we've come through this, where does this leave us now? It leaves us still with a country that's increasingly divided and with problems that we've got to resolve. Maybe we can turn the volume down at that particular point, look at what's happening in our communities, and join that together with what's happening across the country, connect the dots and try to figure this out.
You write in the book about student protests. Where do you think we are with that right now, and how effective a tool is that?
Well, what I think happened last fall was that students were trying to call attention to the gap between the picture of diversity, which has become mainstream, right, which has become sort of our standard, and the reality on campus that we have also dismantled or pushed back against all of these efforts to try to account for the increasing diversity on the campuses. So students, you know, have been accused of being anti-democratic, of trying to squelch free speech. Although the changes that they were asking for last year, the overwhelming majority of them were asking for faculty of color. They were asking for classes that would teach each other about the history of diversity. They were asking for mental health professionals who are culturally sensitive. And very few were asking for any kinds of changes in speech codes. And so it's kind of a perfect example of how the conversation on race has been diverted away from the issues that students are raising, right? The gaps between the picture and the reality, into these old debates, these sort of old cultural war debates that are familiar to me, because when I was a student 30 years ago, these were the kinds of debates that people were having back then. And so I work on a campus. I work at Stanford University. I can see what the sort of pushback against these sort of programs for equity have done to the students, and I can thoroughly sympathize with where the students are coming from. And I wish that we could highlight those voices rather than the voices of people who are not on campuses, haven't been on campuses, don't necessarily interact with students on a daily basis, dominating the conversation about what's happening on the campuses.
When you think about the conversation, how much is it regularly, you used the word diverted a moment ago, and I'm curious as to how often it is diverted just by what happens in the news. The recent police shootings of unarmed Black men, even terrorist activity. How much is what that conversation that we have, that we're trying to have, is diverted because of what's happening in the world?
Well, there's the steady drumbeat, right, of the news every day, which I think in so many ways reinforces the magnitude of the problem. There is polarization, right? There is a feeling of alienation. There is a feeling of disenchantment. And there is a feeling that we can't move forward in all of this. And I got to say, it's really hard to people ask me, like, you've got a hopeful title for your book. How can you be hopeful? And I go and I say in these talks, like, you have to be hopeful. You have to be able to be optimistic about this. You have to have a reason to get up in the morning. And then I go home and I look at my Facebook feed or my Twitter feed, and there's been another killing, or there's been a sort of domestic terrorist event that's occurred. And I think of the wave of Islamophobia that's going to follow that. And I have to say to myself, well, it's time to go to sleep, but I need to get up tomorrow morning and continue to do the work. And so we kind of have to have a point of view that allows us to see beyond the crisis cycle into a future in which we are working this out. And that takes slow, patient, dedicated, committed, engaged work that takes us far beyond the day, the week, you know, the waking up in the morning to what it's going to look like for our kids, their kids, and their kids.
Well, the name of the book is We're Going to Be All Right. It is published by Picador. Jeff Chang, thank you very much for spending time with us. A great pleasure to have you back on the program.
Thank you so much for having me back.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is We're Going to Be All Right, Notes on Race and Resegregation. It's published by Picador. Jeff Chang is the author. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.